weekend, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the ninth day of September 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. I'll get you through this Monday. Welcome to the Daily Daily Caller podcast, action-packed Monday edition. Man, it's been a busy weekend. Lots of little things going on, lots of big things going on. So much freaking stupid. I hope you had a great weekend. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Sean Parnell as much as I enjoyed doing the interview with Sean Parnell. His new book, All Out War, is available now, and you can enter to win a signed copy of it if you just email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Tell me that's what you want to have done with your name, your email, and I shall enter you into it. I'm not sure if the drawing's going to be this week or next week. Kind of got a screwed up schedule this week, but we'll see if we can't get it done. Speaking of getting it done, I always forget to give the winner for the James Hassan signed book, which I forgot to announce on Friday's show because, I don't know, I wasn't drunk, so I must just be stupid, is Phyllis Hoag. So congratulations, Phyllis Hoag. You'll be getting an email from me shortly requesting your address so that I might dispatch a team of assassins to deliver you the book or the mailman. One of the two. I'm not really sure. I'm going to have to check the show's budget. But considering the show's budget is zero, I think you're probably safe because I'll afford like $3 in postage and send you out the book. Congratulations to that. This week, if all goes according to plan, we're going to have I'll know Wednesday. Hopefully I'll know Tuesday if it's confirmed about our guest for Friday. Somebody, I don't want to give it away. It's not that I don't want to give it away. I don't want to jinx it. So you'll just have to keep tuning in. Somebody with a new book, somebody big, although small in stature. That doesn't really mean anything to any of you. Anyway, let's get on with the show, shall we? But before we do that, let's give a nice shout out to our sponsors. Look, I'm a firm believer that if you're healthy, you're happy. That's why I use CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com. It really is. It makes you almost don't believe what's going on. It's a natural remedy made with nothing but the purest ingredients and blended with coconut and hemp oils. And I'm telling you, it's a home run hitter for your health. I was a skeptic, but now I see why it's so popular with pro athletes and weekend warriors alike. I feel better than I did before. Ancient Life Oil is a non-psychoactive, meaning it's not going to give you a high. It's not going to be like you're smoking a joint. Nothing of the sort. I encourage you to do your own research on it. Just search CBD oil benefits yourself. Find out why thousands of people have made CBD oil a regular part of their healthy routine. And if you're ready to live your best life, go to ancientlifeoils.com. Ancientlifeoil.com, the trusted source of high-quality CBD oil. A-N-C-I-E-N-T, lifeoil.com. Use the promo code Derek at checkout, and you receive free shipping. What have you got to lose? Give it a shot. I was shocked. I was skeptical. I didn't believe it. Now I am on board. And it's not just because they sponsor it. I got the mint chocolate, or the chocolate mint flavor that they sent me. And I thought, I'll give it a shot. What are you going to do? Put a few drops under my tongue. And in about 20 minutes, it's like, you know what? The sort of headache that's around my eyes from staring at a computer screen all day, that's gone. There was a general sense. It wasn't euphoria, but it was just normal again. You'd be amazed what stress can do to your life and what strain can do to your eyes or your joints or anything. And the CBD oil from ancientlifeoil.com, it made a big, big difference. Now I'm on board. I'm totally on board. Check it out. Don't forget promo code Derek at checkout for free shipping. Okay, let's get into it. Where to begin? The media is very, very upset with everything because they're terrible human beings and liars and frauds. We'll get to Chuck Todd's little rant. He doesn't like the media being held to their own standards. It's kind of funny and sad and amusing. But I want to start today with Kamala Harris. And this one is going to be filed neatly into the it's okay if we do it file. That file is bursting because Democrats are raging hypocrites. Progressives are raging hypocrites. And they absolve themselves. Well, they are the ones who make the allegations of impurity, impure thoughts, impure speech, impure actions. And then when they do it, when they stray from the grounds of political correctness, it's, hey, it's no big deal. I said I was wrong. I apologized. Moving on. Joe Biden praises a couple of segregationists, and he says, oh, you know what? I didn't mean that. I'm sorry about that. And hey, it's all good. You don't really hear about it anymore. If it were Donald Trump praising segregationists, do you think you'd have stopped hearing about it ever, any day, from now until eternity? Of course not. But at an event over the weekend, a campaign event, Senator Kamala Harris was taking questions from an audience member. And the audience member called Donald Trump mentally retarded, his policies mentally retarded. Now, you're not allowed to say that anymore. I'm allowed to say it now because I'm quoting the man. Kamala Harris's response was, well said. That's what she said. Then, once word spread, once the video went viral, once people found out, it's amazing. You know, liberals are, you know, they're very open about where they stand and very honest to each other. But when they find out the rest of the world heard it, then suddenly it's, well, I have to take that back, or I have to, I didn't hear it. That was her excuse. Well, before we get into any of it, let's listen to the question and pay particular attention to the end. Right after he says it, Kamala Harris's, the audience laughs and claps because they're all a bunch of tolerant liberals, and Kamala Harris laughs and plays right along.
What happened to people of color? So I don't buy that argument that impeachment does not make sense, Senate will acquit. I don't buy that argument. There needs to be accountability. I mean, what are you going to do in the next 1 year to diminish the mentally retarded action of this guy?
Well said. Well said. Well, I plan to win this election, I'll tell you that.
Well said. Well said. I plan to win the... She repeats it twice. Well said. Well said. The crowd is laughing and clapping right along, and Kamala Harris is laughing. Well said. Yes. See, Kamala Harris is of a generation where you could call people retarded. It didn't strike her as odd. It wasn't until the next day, really, that this became a story, because our media is so awful and so lazy. It wasn't until social media really picked up on this that then Kamala Harris was asked about this. Now, if you have any memory of the 2016 campaign, you remember Donald Trump, and this was a talking point left and right from the media about how Donald Trump mocked a reporter from the New York Times who has cerebral palsy. And he was shaking around going, I don't know. Remember, you've seen that footage. They used it in campaign commercials in certain states. The media went nonstop with it, talking about how Donald Trump was so mean and awful and nasty and such a horrible, horrible person. They didn't show you that Donald Trump had mocked somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 other people. That's just kind of how Donald Trump mocks people. He mocked like at least 10 people who didn't have cerebral palsy with the exact same way, going, I don't know what's going on, and looking around and shaking his head and flailing his arms. That's just how Donald Trump does it. You didn't hear that in the news. You didn't see that in a fact check from any of the venerable self-appointed fact checkers and arbiters of truth in the media. It was just Donald Trump mocked a reporter with a disability. Oh my goodness, can you believe it? Just when you thought he couldn't be any more insensitive, here he is doing this. It is an outrage. He can't be president. Well, the people said, screw you. Yes, he can't. Well, you didn't see that kind of coverage with this Kamala Harris stuff, did you? Kamala Harris was asked about it the next day. Now, I want you to listen to this exchange, and in particular, listen to the way the way the reporter comes at it is already giving Harris an out. You didn't hear that, did you? You didn't hear that. I mean, there's no way you heard that, right? You would never, ever in a million years do anything untoward, right, Kamala? I mean, they're giving her an out in this. And she denies having heard this, though. The guy was holding a microphone, if you couldn't tell from the audio there. The audio from that microphone was not only feeding into the cameras, it was feeding into the speakers, so that it was a big outside thing. Not huge, but it was a big outside thing. And if somebody stands up and asks a question, half the people aren't going to hear it. So when you're putting together an event like that, you put together some speakers with some wireless microphones so everybody can hear the candidate and everybody can hear the questions being asked. Everybody appears to have heard the question being asked, except, according to her, Kamala Harris. That's her excuse. I didn't hear it.
Did you hear him? I heard him talk about the other stuff, and then that came later, and it was not something that I really heard or processed or, you know, or in any way condone. That's for sure.
I heard everything else he said, but for some weird reason, my ears shut off then, and it didn't process. Now, she laughed right along with everybody else. She said, well said. Well said. She repeated, well said twice. You heard the audio right there, but I didn't hear it. So you either have to believe that Kamala Harris didn't hear the guy use the phrase mentally retarded, and instead of saying, what was that last part? I didn't hear that last part, because usually, generally, the last part of a question is, you know, the question part. It's the most important part of a question, frames the question, whatever. And when you get a reaction from a crowd like that, you probably want to make sure you hear it. So either she just blew right past it and said, eh, whatever, I don't care what he said. I'll just go ahead and just say I'm going to win, and that's my plan for whatever. Or she heard it and laughed at it and thought it was funny, because she didn't think it was going to be a big deal. And then once it became a big deal, suddenly she said, I didn't hear nothing. I wasn't even in town that month. Now, could you imagine, again, not just Donald Trump, any Republican, could you imagine Ted Cruz at an event and somebody says, you know, the Democrats' plans are mentally retarded, and Ted Cruz says, you're absolutely right, they definitely are. You imagine the absolute fecal storm? It would make Hurricane Dorian look like a nice little sprinkle. But it's a Democrat, and a Democrat in good standing, and the media love themselves some Democrats. Hell, they are Democrats. So it gets the question, did you hear him? You didn't hear him, did you? That's the kind of tough questioning that Kamala, that'll be the grilling that she gets on this whole issue. Did you hear him? Nope. Oh, all right, moving on. Didn't hear it. Okay. The video suggests otherwise. The audio suggests otherwise. But hey, if you said you didn't hear it, you didn't hear it. I mean, I don't know what you're going to do. The Washington Post, their headline on the story says, Harris apologizes after seeming to agree that Trump's policies are mentally retarded. Don't you love that? Seeming to agree. Well said. Well said. That could go either way. Who knows how whether or not somebody agrees or disagrees with something like that. You know, when you say, well said, well said, and then just address their question. Yeah, she seems to agree, but you can't draw any conclusion. Who knows? She could have just been being polite or something ridiculous like that. This is the world that we live in. This is the modern media. Oh, well, the Washington Post, Londonderry, New Hampshire. On Friday afternoon, Senator Kamala Harris seemingly agreed with a voter who suggested that President Trump's actions were, quote, mentally retarded. Then they go on to recount it. She then told the man that she would use the power of bully pulpit to offer support for immigrants, blah, 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 blah. Asked about her response Saturday, Harris apologized and called the words incredibly offensive. On Twitter, the senator said she didn't hear the words the man used. Quote, "If I had, I would have stopped and corrected him. I'm sorry." Well, she gets credit for actually saying "I'm sorry," but this is garbage. There is no way to listen to that audio because the crowd didn't start laughing until he'd finished. It wasn't like he was in a riff with a series of jokes that just had the crowd rolling and they were loud and you couldn't hear anything. And so you get this situation where they're like, hey, we lost him halfway through the question and she was just bluffing to make the event go on. There wasn't noise from the crowd until he was done. If she heard everything up to the end and she was looking right at him, she was like 15 feet away from him maybe. She has to be lying. There is really no other rational excuse. But you don't have to take her word for it. Just think of the same standards, okay? Think of politicians being held to the same standards. What was it? A month, 2 months ago, somewhere in there, Donald Trump was at a rally. And this was right after his tweet to the Gang of Four saying, you know, if you hate this country so much, you can go back to some hellhole country, fix that up, and then come back and show us how it's done if you think we know, you know, how this country should be run. The crowd started chanting, send them back or send her back or whatever it was. One of those two things. It's irrelevant. The story for the next week was about how Donald Trump led the, some of the stories were Donald Trump led the crowd in these chants to send them home, send them back, or I think it was send her back. And then the cable news networks put up a counter, a clock to tick down the seconds of how long it took for the president to start speaking. Because he said, you know, I started speaking pretty quickly. Once I heard what they were saying, I started counting. And Jake Tapper very earnestly did the clock thing, and he said 13 seconds. It was 13 seconds. Donald Trump allowed that to go on for 13 seconds, and they were outraged. And this was again used as evidence that Donald Trump was lying. That Donald Trump did not start speaking quickly, that he allowed that racist, horrible chant against those women of color to go on for 13 seconds. Well, 13 seconds isn't very long. And if you watch the video of it, the crowd is huge. If you've ever been to a sporting event, and I've been to many sporting events where people are pissed off at the umpires or the referees or whatever, some player, and a chant starts. And you hear a chant. You know a chant is going on, but you don't really know what they're saying. It's hard to kind of understand a whole bunch, thousands of people chanting in unison, especially as it builds. The cameras with microphones attached to them to capture the ambient sound of the crowd are far back. I know it seems like they're very close, but they have very good lenses. So you got to figure that the cameras are 50 yards back at least. The chant appears to have started well in the back of the venue, and then it grew, as chants do. It starts with somebody, and then a couple more people, and so on and so forth, until you have enough people chanting that it can be heard. The camera microphones picked it up, but if you've ever been in a crowd and heard a chant start, you don't necessarily know what it is, especially when you're not expecting the chant. Now, if the president had said, chant this back to me, then he wouldn't have any excuse. But he has his rallies where the chants of lock her up about Hillary Clinton are quite common. So you never know what's going to set people off. They go there to have a good time and they expect to maybe chant lock her up at some point. President thinks, well, sooner or later, maybe somebody will start chanting lock her up. I think it's kind of funny because it causes the media panties to get into a wad. I'll just let it go. So you hear the very beginnings of send her back. And it's not very loud. Then it gets louder. Now, over the course of 13 seconds, it gets to the point where Donald Trump steps up to the microphone and starts speaking again. He does effectively stop this. He doesn't wait for it to die down. But we were told that 13 seconds was an indication that Donald Trump was supporting this, in fact, leading it, encouraging the crowd to get involved in this racist chant. My God, can you believe such a thing would happen in the United States in the year 2019? When he said that he stopped it when he started speaking, it was pretty clear that he did start speaking pretty quickly. Because if you juxtapose those chants with any time "lock her up" was chanted at one of his rallies, the president lets that go on. He enjoys it. He laughs. He claps at the crowd. He walks around. He sort of peacocks around the stage. It's not uncommon for that to go on for 30 seconds. If they're chanting "CNN sucks," he'll step away from the microphone and let the crowd take over the event. 13 seconds in that context is nothing. That it would take 10 seconds to figure out what in the hell a crowd is chanting from way in the back as it grows isn't long at all. But CNN, MSNBC, the print media, they didn't bother even thinking about it. It was 13 seconds, as if right from the first time one person yelled it out, Donald Trump knew what was going on. He could hear it plain as day. Now, if you've ever been in front of a crowd, the crowd, there's always a rumble. It's never silence, unless it's a somber occasion, and a Trump rally is not a somber occasion. So it takes a while to figure out what in the hell that noise is. What are they saying there? What's going on? 13 seconds is nothing, especially when the microphones and the cameras pick it up long before the human ears do, simply because of the proximity of the camera and the microphones to the chanting relative to the human ears. Yet, no benefit of the doubt was given to the president there. Not a single iota of benefit of doubt was granted to Donald Trump over that chant. Kamala Harris gets the, hey, man, she seems to agree with it, but I mean, it could go either way. And she said she didn't hear it, plus she said she's sorry, so we're just going to move on. Let's forget this whole thing ever happened. Double standards much? Speaking of double standards, let's go over to the red-headed avenger at NBC News. He's the chief political director or whatever the hell he is, and he's the host of Meet the Press, which nobody wanted one day a week, so NBC News gives it to you 6 days a week. The ratings for Meet the Press are down significantly. Ever since Tim Russert died, the show has been floundering, with one liberal after another trying to pretend that they're not liberal. They've settled on Chuck Todd. I imagine it's his dream job because it comes with a lot of zeros, a lot of power, a lot of prestige, and not so much work. You just basically have to read Democratic Party press releases off the teleprompter, and you are celebrated in Georgetown. Well, Chuck Todd is very, very, very upset with Donald Trump supporters and Donald Trump. He's mad that the president isn't condemning his own supporters for, in Chuck's words, going after reporters. Now, you think, with going after reporters, what are they doing? What are they treating liberal reporters the way that liberal activists treat conservatives out for a meal? Are they showing up at their houses at all hours with bullhorns and bells, keeping up the neighbors, or chasing them out of restaurants? What is going on here? What is it, pray tell, that is happening to these poor, sweet, sweet, nourishing reporters who are just trying to do the Lord's work? And by the Lord, I mean the Democrats, God, government. No. These Trump supporters are the ones who are combed through the social media footprints of liberal journalists, finding things like little racist jokes, little anti-Semitic comments here and there, things like that. Chuck Todd finds that to be a threat to democracy. Now, never mind the fact that just last week, Bloomberg News ran a hit piece on a guy named Leif Olson, who was working in the Department of Labor, they found a Facebook post. They didn't find it. It was given to them by a liberal activist group. You just know it. They won't admit where it came from, but it came from a liberal activist group because the left does this too. They've been doing this for years, and frankly, it's about damn time Republicans started doing it. But they ran this hit job in Bloomberg, and within hours, the guy was invited to leave the Labor Department. Then people actually bothered to look at the post that got the guy invited to leave. The story was that he resigned. The story is always that he resigned. These people generally don't resign. They're invited to leave. They're allowed to save face by resigning. Well, it turns out that even a third grader reading the post would see that this guy was mocking anti-Semitism. He was mocking an anti-Semitic candidate. And you have to really try not to take away that impression from the story, from the Facebook post. Now, that was a prime example of what the liberal media does. They will crawl through the colon of anybody in position of authority or powers, social media footprint, and say, look at this. This is racist. This is sexist. They'll go back 20 years. I mean, hell, look at what they tried to do to Brett Kavanaugh. They went back almost 40 years, 35 years, 36 years to high school, to his freaking yearbook in high school. What does this mean? What is boofing? What are you talking about? Well, it's puking. It was always puking to me. But no, it had to be something nefarious. And they said this made Brett Kavanaugh unqualified, disqualified him to sit on the highest court in the land. It is an outrage that he would even ever do such a thing as a 15-year-old. Now, a week, and by the way, Olson got his job back the next day. So there was no harm there, except in the fact that liberals will still harass him over this for the rest of his life. And if any prospective future employer decides to do a Google search on it, there will be stories about this. And they go, oh, this guy might be an anti-Semite, depending on which story comes up first in the search results. So, yes, they're despicable human beings, journalists. Chuck Todd isn't out there condemning that. What Chuck Todd was condemning over the weekend was the exact same thing being done to liberal journalists. The exact same thing. Now, he goes off on a rant here. I'm going to play it for you. It's just it's like just under 2 minutes long. In the middle of it, Chuck Todd goes full-blown activist. He pulls out the crazy guy in Florida who mailed bombs to liberals. He tries to equate that with people who are searching and screen capturing the social media footprint of liberal journalists. He tries to put them on the same level. That's insane. It would be like, and Chuck Todd would never stand for this, it would be like somebody always, every time a liberal criticized a conservative, them saying, well, what about James Hodgkinson when he tried to kill all those Republicans on that baseball field over in Virginia? It's the same damn thing. You are criticizing conservatives. You are hoping for them to be killed. Well, Chuck Todd would immediately renounce that. He would say that is an absurd comparison, and how dare you make it? But when it's your own team, who cares? No holds are barred. Hypocrisy is the order of the day. Here is Chuck Todd. You can hear, as this rant goes on, his panties getting more and more wadded.
Axios says, quote, the prospectus for the new project says it's, quote, targeting the people producing the news, unquote. Targeting. It's not mince words here. The president's supporters are developing a financial framework designed specifically to target journalists. The president makes a lot of political hay by discrediting the press. In fact, Leslie Stahl of 60 Minutes says he told her why.
He said, you know why I do it? I do it to discredit you all and demean you all, so when you write negative stories about me, no one will believe you.
Every once in a while, a moment of honesty from the president. That's serious. But if it's not serious enough for you, consider this. Remember this man? His name's Caesar Sayoc. He was sentenced just last month for mailing homemade pipe bombs to both prominent Democrats and several media figures that he considered to be enemies of President Trump. Sayoc's lawyers say he is, quote, a super fan who drew inspiration from President Trump. And Sayoc's campaign of terror happened before there was an organized effort by the president's allies to target, defame, and character assassinate journalists. Organized efforts to target and character assassinate journalists and discredit their reporting happen in places like Russia and China, places where freedom of the press is not guaranteed, places where journalists are followed, harassed, and smeared, places where journalists turn up dead or in jail. Organized efforts to target journalists should not happen in America. Some people love the president's attacks on the media. Some say that we should all lighten up, that it's all in good fun, or that the press deserves to be targeted. This is not fun, and it is not funny, and the press does not deserve it. Targeting journalists is not American, and you're targeting fellow Americans, by the way. And the American president, who's supposed to uphold the Constitution, should be saying so, not necessarily encouraging this business. We'll be right back.
Poor Chuck Todd. How will he be able to sleep tonight? Probably on a pile of money. I love it. These are Americans, by the way. Well, what do you call the administration officials? There you go. Is Sarah Sanders not an American, Chuck? Is Tucker Carlson not an American? Is Mitch McConnell not an American, Chuck? Why is it okay? Why do you just report on it as if it, you know, just as it happened? Hey, this happened. Why don't you condemn Sarah Sanders being chased out of a restaurant, Christian Nielsen being chased out of a restaurant, Chuck? Why don't you report on those sorts of things, Chuck? Why don't you condemn them? No one is threatening violence against these journalists. Nobody is actually proposing standing outside their homes with bullhorns or chasing them in public places, unlike Maxine Waters, who said, you find them and you see them in public, you gather a crowd, you tell them they're not welcome anymore. Did you condemn that, Chuck? Did you continue to condemn that, Chuck? You want to cite Caesar Sayoc, a crazy guy who mailed makeshift pipe bombs that didn't explode to liberals? Okay, what about the guy who brought a rifle and shot a bunch of Republicans, Chuck? Did that even make it to meet the press more than once? Did you stop to think about the words that maybe inspired James Hodgkinson? Because Meet the Press was out there right along with the rest of the liberal media spewing the lies about the Republicans' health care plan that set James Hodgkinson over the edge. The Republican health care plan will kill tens of thousands, 10,000 people a year. My God. The horror. Now, if you believe that, you almost have to take action. If you really believe that you are going to prevent the murder of 10,000 people every year, what kind of monster wouldn't act upon hearing that, Chuck? Now, did you ever apologize? Have you toned down your rhetoric? Have you toned down the calls of Donald Trump being Hitler on NBC News? You're one of the bosses over there. You get to say on what goes on the political front, not just MSNBC, but on NBC News and Meet the Press. Yet a steady stream of Donald Trump is Hitler starts with Morning Joe and goes all the way through the Brian Williams program. If somebody out there really believes you, and maybe that's your only saving grace, is that nobody believes you, and they believe that Adolf Hitler, reincarnated, is currently residing at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, my God, what kind of monster would not act at that point? You're complicit if you don't act, if you truly believe that. Did you ever think about that, Chuck? You're going to sit here and whine that some people have gone through the social media feeds of journalists and found offensive things, things for which Republicans are routinely condemned for saying, and are threatening. They're saying, look, if you're not going to be fair, if you're going to keep playing this game, you're going to go down this road, we're going to release these things. We're going to expose you too. If you want to bring up something somebody wrote in the high school yearbook 30 years ago, if you want to bring up something that somebody said or alleged to have said 25 years ago, we're going to show a tweet where you said almost the same thing from 10 years ago. Let's play this game. It's called mutually assured destruction. It helped the world not go into a full-blown nuclear war during the Cold War. But with the media and with it being rhetoric, they don't care. Just last week, that guy at the Department of Labor had his life almost ruined by this same liberal mob that once this project was announced, were absolutely outraged and beside themselves. How dare you? You cannot do that. Do not go through people's old... So it's character assassination. Oh, by the way, here's a quote from a long thread on Facebook. It's out of context. I'm going to label it anti-Semitic and then contact his bosses for comment. And what do you know? The guy gets invited to leave. Well, I couldn't possibly be blamed for that, could you? Well, poor Chuck. He's very, very... Makes you wonder what's in Chuck's past, doesn't it? Makes you wonder what, you know, some of Chuck's producers... Because if you follow anybody on MSNBC or NBC News, their producers, their reporters, even now, they're pretty blatant about their bias. There's no question about it whatsoever where they stand. Now, the producers of the Rachel Maddow show and the Lawrence O'Donnell show and whatever, the Zeta Male show, Chris Hayes, it's to be expected. They're not journalists in any sense of the word, yet they pretend that they are. That's the problem. But these producers are out there on social media tweeting and posting all these horrible things. And these ridiculously biased things. Now, if mixed in 5 years ago, 10 years ago, when they were in college, on their Facebook pages, there are some racist things or things that aren't really racist, but would be considered racist by today's ridiculous standards, which is anything a liberal might disagree with. Why not bring it to light? Wouldn't you want to know, Chuck? I thought that journalism was about getting information out there. What are you so afraid of? Sunlight is the best disinfectant, Chuck. But then again, Chuck's never really liked that. We go back to the American Spectator, Jeffrey Lord. This is April 20th, 2018. He's reporting on a story from Newsbusters and about just happens to be about Chuck Todd. What do you know about Chuck Todd? You see, Chuck Todd's wife, her name is Christian. She is a big, big, big mover and shaker in Democratic Party politics. And I mean, she's a big advisor. She's raking in the big bucks. She works with campaigns. She does fundraising. And if you're in fundraising and you're good at fundraising, and if you know Chuck Todd, you're getting invited to all the rich liberal soirees. And those people have really deep pockets and they're true believers. So they're cutting checks and you're getting your beak wet every time somebody writes a check. Well, she worked with Senator Jim Webb back in 2006 when Jim Webb has been on Meet the Press. Chuck Todd doesn't mention it. Should he should. I am for absolute 100% full disclosure. You should let us know. That doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to be able to ask fair and honest questions. But if you're sitting there watching an interview with somebody and you go, God, that was really softball. Well, if it were prefaced with, by the way, a Brinks truck shows up every week at my house and dumps a pile of money on the driveway from this guy's campaign, then you begin to see things in just maybe a different light. Actually, what it should do is cause the interviewer to be a little bit more harsh, a little bit more insistent on answers, not give such an easy pass. Like when George Stephanopoulos interviewed Hillary Clinton during the 2016 campaign and never mentioned the fact that he worked with in the Clinton White House under Bill Clinton, worked intimately with Hillary Clinton. They were the ones handling the bimbo eruptions back in 92. And no mention of that. No mention of his big donations to the Clinton Foundation. No mention of that whatsoever. And then you get a kind of a squishy interview and you go, huh, well, maybe that's all the information there is out there about Hillary Clinton. Maybe there's no there, because George Stephanopoulos, serious journalist, certainly would have asked tough questions if there were tough questions to ask. Of course, we know that's a lie. Then there's this story from Newsbusters. NBC Meet the Press host Chuck Todd has a wife who's active in Democratic Party strategic communications and sometimes donates to Democrats. In 2012, Christian Denny Todd contributed $2,500 to Senator Tim Kaine. Chuck Todd never felt the need to disclose this during his three recent Kaine interviews on NBC, August 7th, September 18th, and October 23rd. Those are the times after which Tim Kaine had been named Hillary Clinton's running mate. Kind of relevant information. Now, Chuck's defense is, well, what my wife does for a living and what I do are two different things. Okay. I don't care how much money you got, Chuck. If your wife, first of all, if your wife knows what you do for a living, and she might not watch Meet the Press, given the ratings of Meet the Press, but if your wife knows what you do for a living, she should give you a heads up if she's going to cut it. Your wife should always, and your husband, your spouse, whatever, they should always give you a heads up if they're going to write a $2,500 check to a politician. Doesn't matter what your job is. If you're going to send $2,500 to anybody, you should probably give somebody kind of a heads up and say, hey, I'm going to donate to this cause. I'm going to give money to this person. I'm just going to throw it out of a moving train window. I don't care what it is. A good marriage would mean that you're letting people know what you're doing. But if you're host of Meet the Press and you're already under scrutiny because your wife is a big mover and shaker in Democratic Party politics, if you are going to make a personal donation to a politician's campaign, you should probably let the spouse who might end up interviewing that person know about that. So they could not necessarily veto it, although they should say, hey, you know what? I know you want to do it, but it would really make my life a lot easier if you didn't. You might just want to throw that out there. Let the guy know, let the girl know, hey, I'm about to screw you and give your political opponents and any one of your critics a whole lot of ammunition against you. So I just thought I'd let you know. You should have that conversation. Moreover, you should disclose that when you do an interview. Those size donations are public. This was known. So when Chuck Todd had Tim Kaine on, the public knew, the public who were engaged, the conservative media knew, but the conservative media and the Venn diagram, the overlap between the conservative media viewer, reader, consumer, and the Meet the Press consumer is probably about seven people. The rest of the Meet the Press viewers didn't know that, or likely didn't know that. It is Mr. Integrity, Chuck Todd's job, to let that be known to them so that later, if they were to find out, they would not feel as though they were at least being lied to by omission. But that ain't how Chuck rolls. Back to Newsbusters, 2016 story. But Maverick Mail and Strategies, the firm Ms. Todd founded in 2007 with fellow James Webb Senate aides, and then lists their name, they're not important, did heavy lifting for openly socialist Bernie Sanders for president this year. Open Secrets shows a bill, now get this, a bill for $1.992 million made in 10 payments to Maverick from January to April. January to April. $2 million. January, February, March, April. 4 months. $2 million. To save you from busting out the calculator, that's $500,000 a month. Going from socialist Bernie Sanders to the wife of Chuck Todd. Now, how many times did Chuck Todd disclose that Bernie Sanders' campaign had driven $500,000 up to their house once a month for 4 months? Zero. Yes. Todd, back to Newsbusters, quote, Todd has never disclosed this business relationship in 11 Sanders interviews. What is going on here, Chuck? I thought that the media was above reproach, beyond criticism, and to suggest otherwise is downright un-American. But Chuck, your own actions. You cannot claim to be the arbiter of morality and decency and journalism and standards and ethics while this is hanging over you. Why wouldn't you disclose it? You can just simply say it. In the past, my wife's firm has done work for Senator Sanders' campaign. And there you go. That would be the extent of it. That would be enough. You don't have to say, and boy, howdy, we built a swimming pool and then bought a second house with the money. And then we set a huge pile of it on fire because it was so much that was coming from Bernie Sanders' campaign. You don't have to go into the details. The audience, if they're interested, can then go on the internet and check it out for themselves. They can find this information. But you didn't tell them, Chuck. 11 times you didn't tell them, Chuck. So forgive me if I find a tweet from 2014, somebody's junior year in college, where they make a racist crack or an anti-Semitic comment or a joke that is now deemed unacceptable and bring it to light and try to embarrass the person who is making their living working with people and working for people and on behalf of people who are trying to destroy people's lives. Because the people that have been exposed so far in the media for their anti-Semitic tweets in the past, they haven't been fired. They haven't been let go. They have been forced to publicly apologize and then set their social media accounts to private. It's not the same. The end result, the standards are the same a little bit, but the end result isn't the same. Leif Olson had just moved his family to Washington, D.C. from Texas, and Bloomberg thought, we can take this guy out. And they did, for a day. They had no qualms about the fact that the guy had just started a new job. He was a scalp, they could claim. They didn't get it ultimately. But when that same spotlight, that same concept, that same standard is turned onto them, Chuck Todd gives a 2-minute monologue on Meet the Press about how this is a threat to democracy and akin to sending pipe bombs through the mail. No, no, Chuck. It is decidedly not. It is not anything like that, just like your stupid monologues and your liberal opining is not the same as James Hodgkinson opening fire on a baseball field full of Republicans in Arlington, Virginia. As much as you'd like it to be, it's not. It's called bringing out the truth. It's supposed to be what you guys are for, but we all know better than that, don't we, Chuck? Of course we do. Another story that was blown up over the weekend, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, just the idea of the President of the United States calling off a secret meeting with Taliban leaders at Camp David at the last minute. It's supposed to be happening today, I believe. The president canceled it. The media is, of course, framing this. Can you believe that you would do this in the week of the September 11th anniversary? Let's not pretend that the media still cares about that. But my general thought on this is, why are we negotiating with the Taliban? Why don't we just leave? Well, we've had, 18 years of training an Afghan army. The Afghan people have a concept of what liberty is like now. If it doesn't take, it doesn't take. If the Taliban manages to go back into power, then the people of Afghanistan, frankly, and this is going to be harsh and it's going to piss off some people, they deserve it, right? We have this perverted sense of what the rest of the world is like as Americans, and I'm just as guilty of it as anybody else. You think, well, these oppressed people, they just want to be free. The people of Iran want to be free. The people of Saudi Arabia want to be free. They don't actually have a concept of what freedom is like. The leaders do, the people with money, the people in power, they do. And they're complete frauds and hypocrites. You hear stories all the time of flights leaving these countries and there's no alcohol allowed and everybody's in traditional Muslim dress. And then as soon as they get on a plane, they're changing out of their clothes, dressing casually and boozing it up with a bunch of high-priced call girls. Like, oh no, the morality police has never, how dare you even suggest people do something like this. And then they'll fly to Amsterdam to get high for 6 months and bang a bunch of hookers. It's common over there. But the average person on the street has no idea what it is like to actually be free. In Afghanistan, it's even worse because they don't really even have basic communications technology. Over there, they literally are stuck 500 years ago technologically, which is fine. If you don't know that something else exists out there, or maybe you're just content with whatever it is. We have this belief as Americans that people want to be as free as we are. Maybe if they're educated on what it is, they would be. But there's a possibility that they're quite content and happy being a goat farmer in the middle of nowhere, in the mountains, with a village of about 300 people where everybody just kind of has enough to scrape by. Why? Because they're not sitting home at night watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians and seeing, my God, these people have everything and I have nothing. They have nothing to compare it to. It is hubris, in a way, for Americans to think that the rest of the world wants to be like us. Now, a large percentage of the rest of the world wants to live here because we're a concept if they've heard about us, but they don't really know what it's like. Think about this in Iraq. I thought, well, the Bush administration thought, boy, if we can just get rid of Saddam Hussein and have a democracy there, the people of Iraq are ready. They hate Saddam Hussein. He's oppressing them. And if we just remove the oppressor, everything will be so much better and we can move them to a liberal democracy. Well, what happened was we removed Saddam Hussein. We installed that liberal democracy. There was an election, and in the build-up to that election and every day since then, what did they do? The people, by and large, not all of them, don't send the emails, and that's not true. By and large, they reverted to the hatreds that existed long before Saddam Hussein existed. Hatreds that go back hundreds of years. Tribalism. The Sunni, the Shia, the Kurds, the this ones, the that ones. They're with us. You're against us. We don't like you because you're different from us. You wouldn't know by looking at them. You probably wouldn't know by having a conversation with them about anything other than religion. But they immediately reverted back to, they weren't waiting to be free and to sing Kumbaya in a drum circle and all just get along. They were like, now we can go settle those scores. Let's go settle those scores. Afghanistan is the same thing. The Taliban was absolutely oppressive, particularly to women. But before the Taliban came into power, it was not a Western-style democracy where everybody was free to do whatever their life called them to do and achieve whatever it is they put their hearts and minds to. It was tribalism. It was warlords. It was a horribly oppressive place. Everybody should thank God every day that they were born an American or came to America when the alternatives around the world are so much worse. That's what pisses me off about hearing these liberals whine about how awful this country is. Live anywhere else and let me know how that works out for you. But after 18 years in Afghanistan, that's enough. We did it all wrong. We should have started with the concept of liberty, the concept of freedom, the concept of individuality. But there are women and girls who are being educated in Afghanistan, and that is a massive step. Eventually, over a few generations, if things keep going, they could get to the point where they would embrace the concept of individual liberty. But the odds are very slim. And we can't stay there forever. We shouldn't stay there forever. There really is no strategic advantage to being in Afghanistan and seeing Americans get killed. Not very often nowadays, thank God, but still one is too many. It's time to get out. And the threat or the fear is in the neocon world and the hawk world is, well, this will revert back to the Taliban control. Well, that's not good enough. We have done everything we can to prop up a government and to instill a different way of life without doing it at the point of a gun. If it didn't take, if the people don't want it, or the people are just content to let the Taliban march back in there or even take it by force, then they get what they deserve. No more American blood should be spilled on this one. Sorry. It's just enough already. They aren't going to come around and want reality TV and embrace football and baseball. It's not going to happen. That's not who they are. Many of them don't want it. They just want to be left alone. And if they're willing to let the Taliban come in and take over, the Taliban isn't going to leave them alone. They know that. They've lived through the Taliban before. But if they're content to not fight for their own country, then so be it. And I feel really badly for all the girls that will be oppressed and all the people that will be oppressed, but that's not our responsibility anymore. We've given them the training, we've given them the technology, we've given them the weaponry, we've given them the infrastructure as best as their country can handle it. If they choose to squander it, then it's on them. It's on them. You shouldn't be negotiating with the Taliban. We should still be trying to kill the Taliban. We should pull out, and we still have the ability through drones and missile attacks to bomb the ever-loving hell out of these evil SOBs, and we should definitely, absolutely, positively do that every chance we get. But sooner or later, the Afghan people are going to have to stand on their own 2 feet, and they're going to have to decide what they want their country to be. And if they choose that they want to welcome the Taliban back in or sit idly by as the Taliban swoops in and seizes power by force and not fight back, that's not on us. That's on them. All right, enough of that and the high horse crap. It just drives me nuts. I don't understand why the president would invite these people to Camp David or even bother having conversations with them. If we know where they are, launch a missile at them and kill them. You know, how about that? How about you say, come on back in, Taliban. Everything's fine. And then the second they march across the border, you put a bullet in their head. That's the way to do it. Or just get out and let the Afghan people know, hey, we're getting out. You're going to have to step up. If you like the way things are now and the way they're going, you're going to have to fight for it. Because liberty just given, any amount of freedom just imposed, is never appreciated the way it is liberty fought for. That's why this country appreciates it so much more than other countries where they've just pulled out or whatever, however it came. We fought for it in this country. Now we've got a political party mocking that and squandering all of our liberty, but that's our problem. We have our own Taliban. All right, speaking of which, last thing to close out the program, Mayor Pete. Good old Mayor Pete. Remember him? He used to be a player in the Democratic Party for about 20 minutes, and then it didn't work out. People started listening to him, looking at him, saying, South Bend, that's a real hellhole. So maybe you're not the best candidate. Well, he has, on Friday afternoon, he was having a discussion on CNN about the importance of climate change. And at the end here, he lets you know that if you use straws and if you eat hamburgers, you're part of the problem. Now, I love Allison Camerota in this clip. She says it's been 6 months since she's used a plastic straw because she's scared of what it's doing to the oceans. Here's let's listen to the clip first.
To act. I think that it makes a lot of people feel very helpless. Because, yes, we can all do away with our plastic straws, and I haven't drank out of a straw for the past 6 months because I'm so worried about what's happening in the ocean. But people feel helpless when it's something that existential.
Right,
so
and that's...
what do you do about that?
That's one of the things, I think, the downside to us facing just how colossal of a challenge this is it can feel paralyzing, but we can rise to meet this and be proud of it. That's part of what my climate plan is about. It's not only about all of the things we've got to do technologically and with regulation and so on. It's about summoning the energies of this country to do something unbelievably hard. If you look at the moments when this country rose to a major challenge, overcoming the Great Depression, winning World War II, going to the moon, it required something out of all of us. And I think we could be standing taller. See, right now we're in a mode where we're, I think we're thinking about it mostly through the perspective of guilt, you know, from using a straw to eating a burger. Am I part of the problem? In a certain way, yes. But the most exciting thing is that we can all be part of the solution.
You're riddled with guilt for using a straw and eating a burger? I ate two burgers at a barbecue yesterday. I had no guilt whatsoever associated with it. I had a sense of deliciousness associated with it. But who are these people? Well, no, it's horrible. The things we have to do collectively and what you have to do individually, it's riddled by guilt. No, it's, if you're ruled by guilt every time you eat, stop eating. Do yourself a favor, stop eating. And Allison Camerata, I stopped using a straw because I didn't want it to end up in the ocean. Don't throw it into the ocean. Problem solved. Don't throw it anywhere. You're in New York. Don't throw it into the Hudson. That's our problem. Our problem is people littering. The real problem is Asia, by the way. That's where all the plastic and 99% of the plastic in the oceans come from is Asia. Why not pitch a fit at them? How about that one? But no, it's the United States' fault. We must use paper straws. Well, dispose of your straw properly. And if, as a journalist, Allison, if you're finding out that when you throw away your plastic, that it doesn't end up in a landfill somewhere, which wouldn't end up in a sea turtle's belly, but it's being dumped off of the side of a barge, then maybe you could do an expose on, oh, I don't know, how your local municipal garbage dump is really just throwing stuff in the ocean. But no, I don't use plastic straws. I use plastic straws every chance I get, out of spite. When I go to 7-Eleven, I grab a couple extra plastic straws because the kids like to play with them. It's a great toy. If they're fussing in the car, you hand them a plastic straw and they wave it around like Harry Potter, except they don't know what the hell Harry Potter is, and they're quiet for a while. And that's all you really want. Now, do I run down to the Chesapeake Bay and dump my supply of straws into the Chesapeake Bay? No, I do not. I dispose of them properly. I do my civic duty. Now, if Montgomery County decides that their solution after they pick it up is to go and dump it in the bay, is it somehow my responsibility? Or does it become Montgomery County's responsibility? Of course, the real culprit are the jerks who just throw their stuff out the windows of cars and whatever, and litter. We should be using scorn and fines to stop that. Instead, they want to legislate everybody, everything. Well, there's a guy driving a pickup truck who threw his Big Mac wrapper out the car, and that is an outrage. Therefore, we have to ban Big Macs. Why don't you just go after the guy who did it? Now, that's too sensible, and that doesn't give government control. Well, Allison Camerata is happy to cede government control, and Pete Buttigieg is happy to seize it. I will participate in neither. Thank you very much. I'll just drink from my straw. All right, that is all the time we have for today. If you want to enter to win the signed Sean Parnell book, email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. If you bought a copy of All Out War, just send me a screen capture of your receipt, or a picture of you holding the book, not in a bookstore, not going to fall for that, and you'll be entered twice. I listened to it. I had it on book on tape, the audio version, and then I bought the first book on tape because it was so good. The guy who performs the book on tape for Sean Parnell's book are freaking awesome. They're amazing. Sean's a really cool guy, so check it out. Check it all out and email me whatever you got to say, Derek@dailycaller.com. Otherwise, we'll be back here on Tuesday, because that comes after Monday. See you then.
Well said. Well said.